Hey, everybody, how are you? Good to see you all. Talk about a poster child. As they say in Southern Delaware, Mike, you done good, fella. Look, you've been here a long time. I have just a couple points I want to make to you. Number one, let me start by saying thank you. You've heard from the best of our administration already. I'm batting cleanup. I'm not sure I still have the power I used to have, but I'm delighted to be here. And, this is not only critical to workers, we're talking about upscaling, but quite frankly, what all of you in this room realize, and a lot of your compatriots in the business community don't realize, is that it's also critical for the growth of business. And I would respectfully add, it's critical for the strength of the United States of America. Because the history of the journey of this nation has been one thing that's made absolutely clear. Given an even chance, average Americans can do extraordinary things if you give them a chance. And that sounds like hyperbole, but I genuinely mean it. Folks from my neighborhood, folks from Mike's neighborhood, folks from Mary Kay's neighborhood, from the neighborhood you grow up in, they do extraordinary things. You give them an even shot. And that's what they're asking for. They're just asking for a shot. Give me a chance. Mike is a clear example of how it's worked for him. And but there's tens of thousands of other workers who are just looking for an opportunity. More than ever, I think the United States, I know I'm a broken record on this, but I think the United States is better positioned than any nation in the world, not hyperbole to use the word twice, to lead the world in the 21st century economically. In the old neighborhood, I grew up in a little steel town called Claymont, Delaware. We had an expression, the rest of the world's not a patch on our jeans, man. We want them to do well, and we really do. We want China to do well. It's in our interest. We want the EU to do well because it's overwhelmingly in our interest. But the truth is, we are better positioned than any other country in the world. And the reason is, in part you, the reason is we are and will be the epicenter of energy. North America will be the epicenter of energy for at least the first half of this century. Again, not hyperbole. It's real. They're not going to be talking about the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. They're not going to be talking about Nigeria. They're not going to be talking about Venezuela. North America is the epicenter of energy. We got more gas and oil rigs running today than the rest of the world combined. Combined. We are so far ahead in terms of renewable energy. You know, we now are at a point where, because of the investments we've made, we've actually caused the cost of generating wind power on a megawatt basis is as cheap as coal. Things are changing. We have great opportunities. And there's two things, though. If you take a look, it's not just energy. We have the greatest research universities in the world. We're the most agile venture capitalist in the world. We have a legal system that actually adjudicates contracts fairly and protects intellectual property. Our workers are three times as productive as they are in China. International Monetary Fund projects that our economy is going to grow at 3.1%, higher than any advanced economy in the world. We're talking about insourcing instead of outsourcing today. A.T. Kearney, which some of you use, one of the great management firms in the world, they do a survey every single year. They ask the 300 leading international companies in the world. They ask the question, where's the best place in the world to invest? They do it every single year. This year, by a margin larger than any time in the history of the survey, I think it's 17, 18 years, so don't hold me to the exact number, says that in every single category, in every region, in every place, the United States is viewed as the best place in the world to invest. And by the way, you know, a lot of you have businesses abroad as well. You know, you have the Boston Consulting Group does a survey as well. They have one question every year of every single company that is headquartered here but has in a significant investment in China. What are your plans for next year? 54% this year said they plan on coming home. So, folks, in order to keep our edge, we need to build and maintain the most highly skilled workforce in the world. Another day, I would be talking to you as well. There's a second thing we need. We need the most advanced infrastructure in the world, and we're falling way behind the rest of the world there. All during a period of great growth after World War II to the mid-70s, we were investing about 4.5% of our GDP in infrastructure. It's down to less than 1.4% now. In terms of transportation, we have the 26th best infrastructure, transportation infrastructure. The United States, 26th in the world. But last year, the President asked me to come up with a game plan to determine how to make sure we had the most skilled workforce in the world, how folks could get training that they need, how they get connect workers to employers who are hiring. So I spent over 6 months traveling all across the country with some of the very principals you heard testify. I can tell my Senate nature is coming out. Speak today, meeting with you in business, labor, Mary Kay and all her friends in labor, mayors, governors, nonprofits, educators. And we learned at the end of this decade, 1.3 million IT jobs are going to be needed, earning average $62,000 a year with a two-year degree or a computer programmer making $74,000 with a bachelor's degree, 600,000 registered nurses, $65,000 a year, $75,000 a year if they need go from associates to bachelors, 100,000 high-skilled manufacturing workers, welders earning $34,000 a year, mechanics $40,700 a year. The point I'm making is a lot of this occurs, and it doesn't need a four-year degree. You don't even need a two-year degree. Some cases, you need a 16-week certificate. And last summer, we issued a report with 50 actions proposed by federal, state, and local levels in government and the private sector to get folks trained and connected to these kinds of jobs that are out there. Steps like creating partnerships between industries and community colleges and finding ways to pay for it. Offering clear information so job seekers know exactly where to go, exactly what skills are needed, exactly how to get those skills. Increasing apprenticeship programs and on-job training opportunities like the program I visited. Is the rep for Pacific Gas and Electric here? Well, good to see you again, man. Thanks for hosting me. Guess what? 2 weeks ago, I was out there in Oakland, California with them. I sat down with a group of 15 vets they hired. It was just a snippet of what they're doing, training for careers as gas line coating inspectors, a program where they get the international certification and an opportunity to work in the industry. PG&E has gone one step further, and they've just announced they're committing to fill 75% of the management vacancies from within, which many of you are already doing. It means veterans in the training program today have a decent shot of becoming PG&E managers tomorrow. The company's taking steps to make their employees that are trained and ready for management responsibility with a job experience, classroom education, coaching along the way. And because and when you add it all up, the job experience, the in-house classroom training, the coaching along the way, this is stuff of which good managers are made. And all of you business people in here know that they can tell a similar story about programs you've put in place in your company. And many of you are looking to do the same and haven't done it yet. By the way, as I said before, Mike's a perfect example of doing this from the inside out. You know, look, we're in a situation now where just 18 years ago, well, let me say it another way. I won't go into it. Because, you know, the president joked at one of these dinners. He said, I'm learning to speak without a teleprompter. Joe's learning to speak with one. But my problem is that I feel awfully passionate about this. Look, companies around the country recognize the importance of helping entry-level and mid-career employees gain the skills to move to more senior jobs and management positions. Training increases workers' productivity. It leads to less turnover, which means employers don't have to spend more money down the road to hire and train new workers. And it increases innovation and profitability by unleashing the talent of your own employees. You know, look, it's a... it's something that you guys understand, and coming from the corporate state of America, Delaware, I'm a little surprised why more businesses haven't caught on to what you guys are doing. I really mean it, just from a bottom line perspective, just from a bottom line perspective. What's worked for you, I believe, can work for the vast majority of companies all across America. You know how it's benefited your companies, because there are a lot of companies out there who aren't doing what you're doing. You know, back in 1996, the Census Bureau survey showed 21% of all workers between the ages of 18 and 64 received some kind of employer-provided training. That was not that long ago, going on 20 years. But today, that number has been almost, that's cut in half. It's down to 12%. We spent a lot of time trying to figure, as I'm sure you have, why this happened. Why the change? Part of the reason that many of them feel it's not their responsibility. Corporations are increasingly taking a very short-term view, letting today's share prices dictate decisions rather than building for growth in the years on the out end. They aren't investing in their people. And even the companies that do have these programs, you've told me you found it difficult for your employees to take advantage of them for a number of reasons. One, a lot of your employees are not aware of the opportunities, where the training is, how to pay for it, what you need to know before you get to training. I used to have a friend who was a great basketball player, wasn't the brightest academic at the table, but he used to have an expression that made a lot of sense. You got to know how to know. You got to know how to know. I can take you to the Library of Congress, show you one of the greatest libraries in the world. Unless you know how to work the card catalog, it doesn't make any difference to you. For real. And a lot of you are helping your employers know how to know where to go. But you've also found that some of your employees can't afford it. Either they can't afford to pay for the program itself, or just as often, they can't afford to spend the time on it to find a babysitter or the nights with their kids or to take courses while they're working. That's why we proposed, for example, in our community college proposal, you know, 12 years is not enough anymore, guys. 12 years to lead the world, 12 years of free education is not enough. The rest of the world's caught up with us, but I won't try to sell you on that right now. But what we found out is we went to states where they offer a free community college, and a lot of people still weren't taking advantage of it. Because guess what? The communication cost, the commuting cost, the cost of taking care of their kids, the cost of just renting in the city where they're going to that community college. So we added a proposition. We said you can still get a Pell Grant. You have to basically be from a family under 50 grand to qualify. You can get the 4 years and the Pell Grant, which we expect will increase significantly the number of people who take advantage of it. Well, there's got to be ways that we can help down the line, make sure those employees who can't figure out how after work to be able to take advantage of these programs get some help. And that's part of our responsibility as well. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's why we're proposing increasing funding for apprenticeships and other on-the-job training with labor unions, with industry groups, and we're providing grants to creating partnerships between industries and community colleges to train workers. And thirdly, sometimes there's not enough information or guidance to help employees decide if the program is worth it, their time. That's why learning, you can help there, your HR departments. Will they ask questions? And I've already gotten this as I travel the country. Well, you know, will learning this skill help me get a promotion? Does this program lead to a credential that's going to help me in my career? Is this skills program? Is it ready? You know, is my company going to be really investing me to do this? And you are. You're making all these commitments, and helping your employees find and navigate training opportunities at your workplace can be just as important as providing the opportunity in the first place. And many of you have stepped up, not only providing training opportunities for your workers and industry, but to help your workers access those opportunities and give them a chance to build a career. You know, more than 100 companies, and you represent them, have announced new commitments to help employees gain the skills they need to move up to new opportunities. For example, Gap Incorporated made a public commitment to integrate and expand its existing on-the-job career advancement and management programs. They've identified 10 programs to build skills for advancement through pre-employment training, entry-level training, leadership and development, and management training and placement while they're in the company. Two of the largest healthcare unions in the country, SEIU and AFSCME, have teamed up with healthcare providers to place a minimum of 1,700 workers in healthcare apprenticeships programs over the next 5 years. And, you know, the Equitable Life Insurance Company is helping employees plan out their careers by partnering with technology companies that have developed a digital game that evaluates the individual's strength and the skills they need to help them find a way to get those skills. You know, these are the types of programs that we need to build on and replicate in order to give people who have built your companies a shot at a good middle-class life, and also to generate economic growth that you are generating, your company. As I said, there's 100 companies represented in this room today, but there are about 6 million companies in the United States of America. And they've got to be doing a lot more to train and promote their employees from within for their sake and for the sake of the country. So I just want to end by saying thank you. Thank you for being here and helping us spread the word, because nothing breeds success like success. And you are succeeding, and you're demonstrating that this makes sense. And I know it sounds like hyperbole, guys and ladies, but the fact of the matter is, this is an overwhelming naked self-interest of the United States of America. It's in the overwhelming naked self-interest of the United States of America. If we continue to build on and take advantage of having the best trained workforce in the world, and if we finally get back to the bipartisan consensus we used to have on infrastructure, we will own the 21st century. When I say own it, I mean we will continue to be the leading economic power in the world. That's not only good for us, and it sounds somewhat chauvinistic to say as an American, but it's good for the world. It's good for the world if the United States is able to maintain its prominence. And there's nothing out there that suggests we can't. And by the way, I just want you to know, Barack, the President and I know, we don't create jobs. The government doesn't create jobs. You do. You do. You are the people. We're going to determine whether or not we grow as we should. And I think we're in a new period here. I think you are on the cutting edge of it. And like I said, nothing succeeds like success. So we wish you great, great success. Thank you also very much for listening. Get out of your head. Thank you.